problem that we've had and continue to have is while it's a federally recognized right, it's not always a federally protected right.
A push for greater federal involvement in subsistence management. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, March 23rd. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, legislation designed to protect vulnerable Alaskans.
And all too often it's done by, the exploitation is done by people that they have every reason they should be able to trust, often their own children or family members.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Doyon Limited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation, providing oilfield services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com. The State of Alaska Department of Revenue reminds you to file online now for your 2012 PFD. Also, paper applications are located in your community. More information at pfd.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska.
The House today passed a bill the governor asked for, designed to increase protections for seniors and other vulnerable adults. Chugiak Republican Bill Stoltz said financial exploitation of the elderly has become a large problem, and he said it's often from close to home and goes unreported.
Seniors that I know, frankly, a lot of them are embarrassed when they've made a bad decision that affects them probably more profoundly than a bad decision would any of us. They're dealing with their nesting, their dignity of life for the rest of their existence. And all too often the exploitation is done by people that they have every reason they should be able to trust, often their own children or family members.
The bill allows a court to issue a protective order to offer quicker response to financial threats than the current practice of appointing a conservator or guardian for those who might need help. It also allows the person being protected to have more independence while still being protected. Eagle River's Dan Sadler pointed to problems he has seen of family members going after money left to the handicapped. He says he welcomes the protections of the bill.
It's a complicated bill, but people can be pretty devious at the temptation of easy money. And I think it may be complicated, but it addresses a lot of good defensive factors. It's been said that we'll be judged by how we treat the least among us, the sick, the orphans, the widows, and I'm pleased to have this bill before us for approval today.
The bill passed with no opposition. It now goes to the governor for his signature. A regional group advising the Federal Subsistence Board says it should wait before acting on a petition to change fishery management near Angoon. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports from the board meeting in Juneau.
The Southeast Alaska Subsistence Regional Advisory Council says it's too early to turn state management of sockeye fisheries over to the federal government. Bertram Adams, senior of Yakutat, chairs the council.
We found that it'd be very difficult to extend extraterritorial jurisdiction, in the areas that Angoon is concerned about. Because it was not only going to affect, those areas that Angoon is concerned about, but other areas as well, such as Cake or Huna.
Instead, the council recommended waiting 3 years to see if government officials, fishermen's groups, and Angoon leaders can find alternative solutions. The proposal came from Kootsnuwu, Angoon's village native corporation. It asked the statewide subsistence board to back a federal takeover of Northern Chatham Strait fisheries. The corporation and village leaders said that would increase subsistence sockeye salmon harvests. That's because the federal government gives customary and traditional fishing a higher priority. But Adams says the proposal might not allow that to happen.
We also found the secretaries of Interior and Agriculture does not have the authority to manage the resources. All they can do is shut things down.
The regional advisory group's opinion strongly influences the statewide subsistence board. That panel will send its recommendations to the federal Interior and Agriculture departments, but it will not be made public. Kootsnuwu officials were disappointed with the advisory group's decision. Board Chairman Floyd Kukesh, also an advisory council member, said its recommendation is incomplete.
One of the things we really have been struggling with is having the state and the federal governments working together, and that's what we're looking forward to seeing happen. And we're doing this not just to create friction, but to work on making it better for the subsistence user for Angoon.
The Advisory Council did recommend re-examining management plans for the area's seine fishery and the nearby Hidden Falls hatchery, and it called for studies and regulatory changes to increase Angoon sockeye catch. Representatives of government agencies and fishing groups suggested a variety of solutions at the meeting. Kukesh worries whether they will follow through.
It sounded very sincere. We seem to have had some good people out there, but the one thing that we wanted the most was to get it in writing. We seem to be a little lacking because once this meeting's over, people are going to kind of go away, and we're hoping we can maintain the momentum where we can keep them there.
Tlingit Haida Central Council and other tribal governments testified in favor of Kutznuu's extraterritorial jurisdiction petition. Sea Alaska General Counsel Jaylene Arujo, who is from Angoon, said the Regional Native Corporation backs the plan. She said the federal government has a better policy on subsistence, but doesn't always use it.
The problem that we've had and continue to have is while it's a federally recognized right, it's not always a federally protected right. We have the federal agencies, and I speak with all due respect, that are too quick to delegate or give up jurisdiction to the state. Federal agencies often simply adopt the state bag limits and harvest limits without making their own determinations and considerations.
Others talked about how subsistence sockeyes fit into Southeast Native culture. Alfred McKinley Sr., who's fished since 1944, said those catching the sockeyes share with those who can't.
In Tlingit, they say, ka'ich tushi, ka'ich tushi. You help each other. That's how our people are.
Commercial fishermen, hatchery, and industry groups testified against the petition, calling it overkill. Petersburg's Jeremy Jensen seines in Chatham Strait.
I think before we get to the point where we're eliminating whole areas for fishing, we need more research, more data, and a better understanding of what's happening.
Others said part of the problem is a key spawning route with a difficult waterfall. They suggested blasting or building a fish ladder below Kanalku Lake, where Angoon residents harvest sockeyes. Bob Thorstenson is with the Southeast Alaska Seiners Association.
Can't we fix the frigging falls first? Let's get the fish in the lake and worry about who owns it next.
If recent history holds, federal officials will make their decision on the petition within 4 to 6 weeks. I'm Ed Schoenfeld, reporting from Juneau.
The Senate today joined the voices of Alaskans complaining about those unplugged exploratory oil wells that are polluting the National Petroleum Reserve Alaska. The 137 wells were drilled on federal land by the federal government between 1944 and 1982. And so far, only 7 of them have been properly closed. Wasilla Republican Charlie Huggins said the Department of Interior wants to limit its responsibility to sealing and cleaning only one well per year.
There are 43 of these wells that are flagrantly outside any standard by any stretch of the imagination. There are 3 that can't even be found in the northern tier, in the Arctic, the area that is, quote, so prone to pollution and is so fragile.
Huggins said that some environmental groups have used photos of the federal wells as examples of resource management by private industry. He said if the wells had been the responsibility of Alaska or the oil industry, they would have faced billions of dollars in fines and would have been vilified by the news media.
Over the years, there's been approximately $9 billion that have been collected by the federal government and NPRA and Alaska OCS, Outer Continental Shelf, for lease sales. That would go a long way if some of that money could be applied to the problem we have in pollution of our northern tier.
The House needs to agree with a minor correction the Senate made. Once done, it will be sent to the White House, the Department of the Interior, and the state's congressional delegation. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a new group of urban artists start showing in Anchorage.
This is kind of our first venue to kind of introduce ourselves to the public as a group and then to invite other artists in.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline for over 30 years. Alaska Housing Finance Corporation offers home choice seminars that provide tools for making informed decisions about purchasing and financing a home, and loans tailored for first-time home buyers. There's more information at ahfc.us. This message sponsored by Alaska Housing Finance Corporation.
The House Finance Committee has advanced a proposed constitutional amendment that would allow public money to be used for private schools. H.J.R. 16 is a companion to a bill that would allow state-sponsored scholarships for students to attend private schools. Both measures are from Representative Wes Keller. The Alaska Constitution states that public money can't be appropriated except for a public purpose. H.J.R. 16 would add that nothing in that section would prevent payment of public funds for the direct educational benefit of students as provided by law. Shifting Sitka to more renewable sources of energy will keep millions of dollars from leaving the community over the next 20 years. That's the conclusion of a report released this week by the Sitka Conservation Society. KCAW's Ed Ronco has more.
Right now, Sitka uses renewable resources for about a quarter of its energy needs. Non-renewable resources, such as oil products, account for three-quarters of the energy in town. Work on the 22-page report was led by Scott Berlinski, a former city public works official. Berlinski says over the next 20 years, Sitka will spend upwards of $1 billion on oil. Andrew Tomes is executive director of the Sitka Conservation Society.
If we invest in renewable energy, there's a good chance that we can save over $500 million of that money that we would spend, and that that money would circulate in the local economy.
The study considered existing technology only. It took into account the possibility of using wood products for heat and the additional electrical capacity that will be added by expanding Blue Lake and developing another hydro project at Tecats Lake. The study also makes recommendations. It says Sitka should develop a stronger plan for its energy future. It also says the electric department should be given the authority to charge higher rates when power is limited and lower rates when excess power is available. It also recommends heat pumps for space heating and other measures to increase energy efficiency. Tomes says the city has already taken a big step forward.
The assembly started to take one of the first steps here the other night when they developed a program to help homeowners make investments to become more energy efficient.
Demand for electricity continues to grow in Sitka, and in recent months, the city has begun imposing a diesel surcharge on electric bills. The money is designed to pay for the high cost of operating diesel generators to supplement the power generated by Sitka's two hydro projects. Tomes says solving the energy problem in Sitka will require a combination of actions.
We need to be doing efficiency, we need to be doing conservation, we need to expand Blue Lake, and we need to have a variety of different energy options to power our community.
The report's presentation leads into the upcoming chamber luncheon on Wednesday, which will feature a panel discussion on energy in Sitka. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ed Ronco.
Making funny noises has landed many kids in hot water during school or other quiet occasions. But for Fred Newman, the talented live sound effects guy for Garrison Keillor's Prairie Home Companion Show, it's how he makes his living. Newman is in Anchorage to help Cyrano's Theater Company celebrate its 20th anniversary. When I asked about his title, he said there isn't one.
It's just a damn scam. I'm just a guy making sounds, you know, on Prairie Home Companion.
So they used to call that the Foley guy. Do they not call that
Foley
guy anymore?
It's not really Foley. The technical Foley is specific to film. And so when you put in the sound of footsteps, those are not on the film. You put them in later. That's Foley. So it's not technically Foley in the business, but it's sound effects. And it sits somewhere in between music and acting.
Did you get in trouble a lot as a kid or in school?
Oddly, no. Because I wasn't the only kid that did this, and the teachers were hip to it. It's not unique. I was not unique in that area. This is in rural Georgia, and that area was particularly rich in sound. in that area is where Joel Chandler Harris wrote Uncle Remus stories, and he recorded those Black American accents telling those African stories. He told those so well. That's what was really around. Even in the writing of those stories, they fap upside the head. That's the way I heard stories, so I just picked them up.
And how is it that you came to decide, I'm going to make a career out of making funny noises?
I think it's like you're going along a road and you stumble over into a ditch and like, this is fun over here. There is no career in this. I mean, there's only one show that I know that has live sound effects. Everywhere else pushes a button if they're doing it. And my particular skill that's based on my dyslexia is that I don't do sequences very well, but I'm very moment to moment. And Garrison is very much like a jazz wordsmith. So when he makes up stuff, I can just roll with it. And I'm not using a lot of props like old radio guys. It's not as good. There was a time we had a washing machine. And we had this sound effect. And he said, no, just use your mouth. It's funnier. Or a hinge on a door. That it's better when it's funnier when you do it with your mouth. It's not as real, but that's not the point of the show. So it really works. My unique skills, and odd that they though they may be, they kind of fit in there.
Even though it's a mouth skill, would you have trouble if someone tied your hands?
Yeah, undoubtedly. I think there was a little bit of resentment in the early days of the show when I came on radio and I'm flapping my wings and I'm gyrating around, and if I jump off a cliff, I'm actually flailing my hands over. Right now when I'm doing this, my hands are over my head and I'm imagining air as I'm. Then I feel it. That's the actor in me. I've got to put myself into it, and I become my own little virtual reality and let the sound come out that way.
How is it that you got connected to Cyrano's?
You know, we came here in this past summer, and what's the word? The word is not engulfed. It's accepted, just this warm, like hitting a catcher's mitt. Boom, with this audience. It was just a fantastic audience. And Sandy Harper came backstage. I met her, and we talked about theater and talked about voices, and you could tell this lady runs very deep. And she told me about Cyrano's, and I actually think I said this, and I said, if I can ever be of help, this sounds like something that's really been, 20 years to have theater, like local theater, to doing this. I said, give me some of that. And I love the fact that everybody I met up here had this lovely weirdness. That these were different kinds of people up here in Alaska. The love stories.
A lovely weirdness. I'll have to remember that characterization.
It's true. I mean, and I was walking on a path yesterday with cross-country skiing. People said hi. People stopped. We talked. That doesn't happen on the East Coast. That happens out here in Anchorage. That's really cool.
Fred Newman is the guy behind all those great sounds you hear on Prairie Home Companion. He'll be at the Anchorage Museum tonight to help Cyrano's Theater Company celebrate their 20th anniversary. More information is at our website, alaskapublic.org.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Bristol Bay Native Corporation, generations of jobs, heritage, and history. Bristol Bay, a place that's always been. Online at bbnc.net. And by GrantStation, your fast track to funding, helping identify appropriate grant makers for your organization's programs and projects. On the web at grantstation.com.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Tara Bicknell. Today on AK, redefining Alaskan art. When someone says Alaska Native art, the first thing that comes to mind is often traditions like ivory carving, skin sewing, or intricate weaving. But a new group of young Alaska Native artists in Anchorage is working to expand that image to one that embraces modern life as well as honors their heritage. They call their group Diaspora, and they held their first art opening titled One Night Stand last Friday night at the Alaska Experience Theater. APRN's Lori Townsend was there.
In a room filled with a wide variety of paintings, photographs, performance art, and masks, artists and art enthusiasts mill about in excited little groups, nibbling on veggies and sipping wine. Liz Medicine Crow works for the First Alaskans Institute and says she's reclaiming her passion for making art. She led the formal introductions.
I'm Clinkin and Haida. I'm from Cake, Alaska. I work here in Anchorage.
Cloud Medicine Crow, South Dakota.
Chanella Larson-White, Hillside.
Liz reminded them to acknowledge their heritage.
I'm Tuknachadi from Deganahit, Wushkitan Yedi. I'm Raven Koho, my father's eagle shark from the Thunderbird House in Ak Bay, or Tlingit.
Adi, I'm just Inupiaq.
I am Yupik Inupiaq and Alaskan.
That's Drew Michael, a young carver who is known for his masks that blend traditional and contemporary themes. He is the inspiration behind bringing the group together. We duck into a quiet hallway to talk. He said he wanted to build a community of artists and kicked it off by reaching out on Facebook last December.
Yeah, we've been meeting at different people's homes and kind of organizing and looking at longer-term goals of building more art community outside of just the Native community. We want to invite other artists in that are non-Native.
For this group, Diaspora describes the distance of many young Natives from their homelands because of work, education, or cost of living. Drew Michael says he doesn't want to be pigeonholed as a certain kind of artist. He's expanding into new mediums like glass and metal, and he takes exception when someone discredits his contemporary work as not Native.
And I say right back, like, how can you say that? Like, I am Native, and I live now. I can't be living in the past.
Akachuk Schaefer, a painter and sculptor from Kotzebue, agrees.
If you walked into our show, it wouldn't necessarily say that, oh, this is a Native art show. So we are artists, and we are Native. And so, this is kind of our first venue to kind of introduce ourselves to the public as a group, and then to invite other artists in, non-Native and Native.
But art is forged from more than just personal experience. Especially for Native artists, the struggles of the past influence modern interpretations. In a darkened side theater is another more brooding perspective. A performance art piece by Cloud Medicine Crow blends haunting country tunes, often heard on reservation stations, with tribal images from his childhood projected behind a man painting at an easel. Three young women dressed in slinky gowns continually circle, enticing him to take offerings from the bottles they carry.
The three young ladies that I had represented substance abuse and kind of the dark things that a lot of us struggle with. A lot of people, you know, it's not just one race, but all people have issues with it, a lot of artists.
Cloud says the new group of artists plan to bring in others who don't have the resources to show their work. He said, we want to help. Back in the main exhibit hall, Alice Dufin holds a bright-eyed baby girl who seems happy with the vibrant colors, lights, and music. Dufin is visiting from Amsterdam and was heading to Point Hope. She says the art is amazing, contemporary, Native, but not just Native.
It's of this age. It's what people of this age are, what's in their minds, Native or not. So I really, really like it. It's very strong.
And Anchorage resident Diane Hirschberg says she's impressed by the diversity and the insight into the contemporary Indigenous art scene in Anchorage.
There are pieces here that are going to be lasting pieces of work, that this is stuff that 20 or 30 years from now people can look back and say, this is where some of the seminal pieces from that generation were first shown.
The show was called One Night Stand, but if you missed it, there will be another showing on Friday, April 6th at the Alaska Humanities Forum offices in Anchorage. For AK, I'm Lori Townsend.
And now it's time for 300 Villages. Today, we're headed to Kotlik, a village near the Bering Sea coast in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta.
My name is Lori Mike, City Manager for City of Kotlik.
population is about 601. We have water, sewer, two local stores, a high school. We have a lot of snow. It's small. We're on the river, the Kotlik River. There's houses across on the island from the main side of the river. And on the other side, there's houses there, too. We're part of the Yukon River drainage. We have willows, not trees. We have willows. It's pretty marshy. We don't have roads here. We just have a boardwalk. We don't have cars here at all. No cars here. We just have boardwalks. It's too marshy for gravel. Gas now is $7.25 a gallon. Diesel is $6.65 a gallon. The milk, the carton milk, there's 12 one-quart carts. Those are $40 a case. Like doing the subsistence lifestyle, being with family, ice hooking, fishing through the ice, fish for pikes, lush. I enjoy my subsistence lifestyle, going and getting in a boat or a snow machine anytime I want and just go.
Lori Mike is the city manager in Kotlik. 300 Villages is AK's attempt to put every community in Alaska on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK on Alaska News Nightly. We had help this week from Lori Townsend, Annie Feit, and Dave Waldron. Tune in next week when we'll get an inside look at the most famous police blotter in the state, and maybe even the country. I'm Tara Bicknell.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau and Ed Ronco in Sitka. APRN's Dave Donaldson reported from Juneau. Tara Bicknell was our guest AK host this week. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Crowley, providing tanker escorts, fuel delivery, and energy support services to Alaskans for nearly 60 years. From Valdez to the North Slope, Crowley knows Alaska. CrowleyAlaska.com. The State of Alaska Department of Revenue reminds you to file online now for your 2012 PFD and consider sharing a portion of your dividend through Pick, Click, Give or contributing to a college savings plan. More information at pfd.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska. Timing is everything. A mother who waits until her child is at least 2 years old before becoming pregnant again has a better chance of regaining strength and energy between pregnancies. Her baby is more likely to be born on time and at a good weight. So talk to your health care provider to find out how to plan your pregnancies and ask for the state's free birth spacing booklet. Take the time to build a strong and healthy family. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
Whether visiting Barrow or attending business in Juneau, APRN goes with listeners wherever they roam. Your company's message can span across Alaska on 26 stations. Find out how by calling 907-550-8437.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.